You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
And as promised, this hour, we are in conversation, of course, with Nick Katsavelos, who is Adam Katsavelos' brother. And this follows that video of Adam that he had taken of himself, had distributed, and then it was leaked on a beach somewhere in Europe, giving a fake weather report, including saying that it's a great day because there are no kaffirs around. Now, there have been incredible outpouring in once that particular video went viral from South Africans. Businesses have cut off ties with the family business as well. And Adam hasn't, I don't think he's back yet in the country, I'm not sure. But certainly the family obviously then issued a statement saying that, in fact, what will now happen is that his minority shares will, as soon as practically possible, will in fact be got rid of, and that he's no longer the employee of the family business as well. And the family hasn't really spoken to broadcast media. There was something in the Sunday Times yesterday, an interview in part with Nick, but I had asked Nick, with the help of a colleague of mine, to come to the studio and to engage me on some of the issues around this particular incident that has happened. And I'm grateful that he has agreed to do so, to come to this platform rather than to another platform where, I don't know, the conversation might be safer. So let me be very clear what will happen and what won't happen. Okay, firstly, you can watch this on the 702 Facebook page. We're live streaming there. I'm not going to jump down the guy's throats. I'm not going to lacerate him. If you're looking for a lynching, go somewhere else or do it yourself. I'm not the head prefect of fighting racism. I'm going to treat the guy with dignity. However, that said, there's also no agreement between me and Nick that any question is off bounds. What I gave him my assurance on when we spoke telephonically a couple of days ago is that if he doesn't want to answer a question, then he doesn't have to. Obviously, he doesn't have to. He elected to come into this space, but my journalistic duty is to ask all the obvious questions in your head. But the broader issue we want to get to over the course of the hour is in particular to talk about family dynamics. And like I said to you on the open line today as well, I've got a deep interest around our relationships with siblings, extended family members, and then also understanding how do you square not wanting to throw a sibling under the bus with deep empathy for the victims as well. That's a very complicated issue. For me, that's probably going to be the nub of the issue this hour. But you can tweet me the questions you'd like me to put to him at Eusebius, at Radio 702, at Cape Talk. SMS me 31702 31567 or give us a call, and I will pick up what the most important issues are that you think we should be engaging. Nick, good morning to you, and thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning, Eusebius.
How are you feeling?
I am very, very nervous. I'm terrified. I'm a very private person and don't like really being the center of attention. So this is not my most comfortable space. Yeah.
Well, thank you for agreeing to this conversation,
sure.
Agreeing that it's an unscripted conversation. And from my side, obviously, I will respect anything you don't want to answer. And we've agreed on what issues we do need to get to. I wonder whether we can just start with some of the factual questions before we get to the issues affecting the entire country. When this video surfaced of your brother, how did you first come to know of it?
Okay, so it was a normal work day for me. It was a Monday, and a pretty busy day, and I saw a WhatsApp voice message from my brother, and this was roughly at 12 o'clock on Sunday. Ignored it because I was busy. Eventually listened to the message, and the message I could hear, he was in a flat panic, and he said to me that he had sent a video to a WhatsApp group of friends of his, and somebody had sent it and it landed up on Facebook or Facebook Messenger or something, and he was in a total panic. I asked him then to send the video to me. At which point, when I saw the video, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and at that point realized that this thing was going to blow up. Even though it had gone nowhere near mainstream media, I knew that this thing was going where it has gone. He was looking for help. I said to him, clearly there's absolutely nothing I could do for you. What's going to happen is going to happen, and I'm also going to need to ride the storm. Yeah.
So when you see the video, you obviously react to it, and you can't choose which hat you wear, but we are complex individuals. So you watch that as a South African, you watch that as a brother, you watch that as a business partner, you know what I mean? Like, in Nick comes together many different roles. Be that as it may, to the best of your recollection, what thoughts came into your head when you heard the content of the speech?
I know that this is it's something that keeps coming up here, that because my brother has made this video, that this is a normal discourse, or I don't know what it is that people think that happens within my family. It isn't. I would say the first thing that occurred to me was, who the hell would be sitting on a beach in paradise making a video like this? I actually just could not believe what I was seeing. I was horrified. I don't really know what else to say. I was really totally shocked. It's disturbing, to say the least. Yeah.
Were you surprised?
You know, I know it's going to sound like I really was surprised, because the first thing being is it's not language that is generally used. It's not a word that I hear often anymore. That's firstly. I didn't receive this video personally, and it's not the kind of video that my brother has ever sent to me before. There's 7 years age difference between us. We don't really have the same friends. I was very, very shocked when I saw it, yeah.
What, is he younger than you?
He's 7 years younger than me.
Mm. You know, there's an interesting distinction that we make between a racist character and an action that is racist. If one wants to really penetrate into a discussion around racism. Now, in my opinion, I'm speaking now just as Eusebius and as someone who's written a lot about race, I think it is possible sometimes for one to not be a racist person and say or do something that is racist. And then I think sometimes there are things that we say or do that are so egregious that we cannot be given the benefit of the doubt whether we had an off moment. And there aren't many things in that category. So, for example, I might tell an off-color joke about women. We can't yet conclude that I'm a misogynist, but we can say Eusebius said something misogynistic. But there are certain exceptions. In the American context, it's the word nigger.
Correct.
In the South African context, it is the word kaffir.
Yeah.
Is your brother a racist?
I think, the video is... what could I say about the video other than to say the video, it's obvious what's been said in the video. I think you raise something really interesting, and that is that my brother is certainly not a white supremacist. My brother certainly doesn't sit and speak around race on a regular basis. To be quite honest, he's not that interested politically. I think he's a multifaceted person. I think he doesn't come from a family of hardcore racists. I think that, you know, and I'm just speaking for myself here, because I'd like to go there more than probably, and I'm happy to speak about my brother. I grew up, I was born in 1971. I never went to school with black people. I served in the South African Defence Force. There are certain prejudices that are ingrained in me that I've attempted very, very, very hard to work on in my life. And they also, it's not like a baptism that they go away. They're things that you need to be aware of constantly, because they lie so deep that, you know, they kind of... it's a blind spot that's within a lot of us, I think, that you need to be vigilant and kind of aware of. It's just, you know.
Look, I want most of this hour to be about you. That's our agreement, and about your family.
I'm happy to talk.
But our families are also weird things, right? And we have different levels of comfort talking about our families publicly. It's a very weird thing talking about your family public. I mean, I've written extensively about my family in all of my books, and some of them are very uncomfortable. Some are even unhappy that I've done so. But I own my own truth as a writer, right?
Okay.
And one of the stories I sometimes share, which is racism light. It's racism, for sure.
I get it.
But it's marginally less egregious than the K word. And it's the story I've told of my mother in a ironically poor colored community, where you would think there would be affinity between poor colored people and poor black people because they share a similar class status in the 1980s. I'm a similar age as your brother. And when we didn't want to sleep at night, my mom would say stuff to me like, Eusebius, the Bantus han julle kyk as julle in die vensters toe maak, right? Now, I recognized that was racism on my mom's part.
Correct.
That was racism. It's very painful to say that. She has long ago passed away. I love her deeply, but I recognize that there is incredible racism in my family, even while there are in theory, affinities between poor or working class colored people and black people. Why, out of interest, and take us into your heart,
sure,
do you find it hard to say unambiguously, my brother Adam is a racist?
You know, okay, so let me just put a couple of things into perspective here, because you want to talk about family. My family has not only been ripped apart, but to the point that people were very upset with me for coming on here to speak about this. My parents left to go overseas yesterday. My father and myself barely said goodbye to each other.
Hmm.
I grew up in a family where we look after each other, and it's very difficult for me. You use the term to throw my brother under the bus. I love him. I'm unequivocally supportive and love him, and I see him as a whole human being. For me to unequivocally say that he's a racist, I find it very difficult to say that, although I would say, yes, there is racism within him.
Hmm.
So, you know, if I look at the last conversation that I had with my brother, which was on Saturday night, we had major conflict about me coming on here, and specifically around this issue. I'm not going to lie, it's extremely difficult for me. I'm going to attempt to do my best to be as honest as possible here and share whatever I can. And if I need to be guided towards the truth, well, you know, give me a shove.
Sure,
but I'm battling with this.
It's before we easy. Take our first break, and after the break, yeah, we're going to talk about family directly, which is a centerpiece of this conversation. I just want to get a couple of other factual things out of the way. Can you just tell us, to the extent that you are comfortable, what has life been like for the family since this video surfaced? What have been the effect on your businesses as well, and relationships with both business colleagues, but also family, relatives, and friends?
I think, listen, it's been a double-edged sword. I mean, from the perspective of family, you know, we've really bonded and we've shifted and we've gone through the gamut of support, of fighting, of screaming. It's taken all the family dynamic and bubbled it up to the surface in many ways. I think we will still be a family at the end of this. In terms of business, my business doesn't exist anymore. 20 years of business, and I have no anger towards my customers. They have been forced into a position where they can no longer purchase from us. That is the nature of what's happened here. My staff members are terrified. I have spoken to them regularly and met with them. From the business perspective and on the factual side, I'd like to get this out the way so that we can move.
Hmm.
As me and my father have sat down, we're trying to, the only way we can see to kind of make this wrong right is we want to take my brother's shares and create a trust and give them to the employees of the business, do an employee equity. I'm not going to say that is not selfish as well. I've got a family to look after and I need to protect my interests. So that is the best way that we see fit to kind of remedy this wrong.
Mm.
In terms of my other business, and this is also very, very relevant, the smokehouse is not a Katsavalos business. There are other partners involved. I'm removing myself entirely from the business. I'm removing myself as a shareholder and as a director with no compensation. I don't feel that they're in excess of 30 people who work in that business who are exceptional human beings. And my partners, quite frankly, have nothing to do with this. So I'm okay with that decision. And that's on the business side, factually, that's where things stand at the moment.
Okay. 19 minutes after 10, I'm in conversation with Nick Katsavalos. Am I saying your surname right, by the way?
You can. Sometimes it's Katsavalos, sometimes it's Katsavalos.
Brother of Adam. And one of the questions that have popped up the most on my social media pages is, can you ask Nick, what do they talk about over dinner? How can he be as surprised as we are? So we're going to talk about family dynamics. What were Christmas lunches like? Was this the first time that you'd encounter something like this? But also, how was this guy raised, right? Because you don't come from nowhere. You come from a family, a community, a schooling environment, and all of these things go into the making of who you are as an adult. And yet, as a philosopher, I also think to myself, but at the same time, and you heard the same on the open line with Dali Tambo and his sister, we also have our own agency. There are profound differences between me and my siblings. So where does family culpability end and individual responsibility start? Let's explore that on the other side of this.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
22 minutes after 10, and I'm in conversation with Nick Katsavalos, who is the brother of Adam Katsavalos, and of course By the way, this interview is not just awkward for you, it's also awkward for me. I get tweets like this one from this idiot, Kurisani, who says, so are you going to interview every family member until we feel sympathy for Adam? No, but it is my journalistic duty to go to a story that is of public interest, especially if I feel as a broadcaster that it occasions an opportunity to talk about South African realities. And my politics on race are very clear. The person here who's in greater danger in this conversation is probably Nick, because I've got the material and the understanding of racism as a black person with which to be incredibly hard on him. So please put aside your own prejudice about what the point of this interview is, or give me a call and you and I can take it up after Nick has been here. Natalie Malchus says he's not that interested politically, but he was pretty interested, Adam that is, in South African politics when he used the K word so easily, Eusebius. Connie says, I sympathize with Nick. I do wish that Adam was the one, however, sitting on the hot seat. We reached out to him. We tried to reach Adam. Where is he, by the way? Is he still overseas?
Adam is still overseas, yeah.
Okay. And then Madlamini says, I refuse to believe that Nick wasn't aware that his bro is a racist, but care. So let's talk about that a little bit. The public goes, if you are a close-knit family.
Right.
And if you love your brother, and that's the kind of language you've been using, and presumably, you have a lot of social contact. And so it is extremely hard for the public, Nick, to take seriously the idea that you could have been as surprised by the use of the K word as the rest of the country. What were Christmases like? What was he like as a teenager? No one just pops up at the age of 38, 39 using the K word.
You're quite right. So let's go back then. What was he like as a teenager? I actually wasn't here for his teenage years. That's the truth. I lived in America for 7 years. We didn't spend that time together. I think family lunches, I think they were pretty normal by any standard. We didn't sit around using language like this. I will tell you the last time I heard this language out of his mouth. Let's talk about the family. Let's talk about the lunches. I think... my father's of Greek descent, my mother's not. Two quite divergent cultures. I grew up in an area that was considered it was Helen Suzmanville of South Africa. I grew up in Norwood, which by whatever standards in those days was supposedly liberal white South Africa. And these things are all relative looking back, because in truth, was it liberal? No, it wasn't liberal. We were living in an apartheid state. I can say unequivocally that we never sat around a Christmas table with this kind of language being used by either of my parents. Have I heard my brother use this language before? Yes. The last time I heard my brother use this language, and this is the truth, he went for a hike 4 months ago in the Drakensberg with two of his mates, and it was a five-day hike, and they were attacked on top of the mountain, and boulders, he said to me, boulders the size of my head were thrown at his tent while he was sleeping. And he came down from that hike, and the first time I saw him, and he did use this language, and he was furious, and he said to me, I've had enough of this country. I don't want to live like this anymore. You cannot even go for a walk in the mountains.
And he used the K word.
And he used that word specifically, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know that probably sounds like a defense to try and deflect attention away, but this is actually the truth. That is the last time I heard it, and that's when it happened.
Because I thought to myself, if I am aware that I do not have a receptive audience, I wouldn't use the word moffy, for example, unless there's a familiarity between me and the people that I'm about to send my speech to on the WhatsApp group. And you say you weren't part of the recipient. I think that's a good thing, because in my mind, and I'm just thinking about this intuitively and practically, if I'm prepared to use a certain kind of language, and I know secretly that there will be social disapproval, there may be economic consequences for me, there may be legal criminal consequences, then I will self-censor or I will keep the video private. But if I'm going to disseminate it, even in a small circle of friends, for example, I'm going to do so based on a certain kind of rapport between myself and the recipients. So who is it that your brother published this video to? Because my intuitions as a South African, not just as a black South African, but as a South African full stop, is that I'm only going to send that kind of footage to a receptive audience.
Absolutely. 100% absolutely. I don't share common friendships with my brother, so I can't. Of the group that he sent it to, I actually have met one of the people. The other three I don't know, have never ever met them. He went away on a weekend away with people to a game farm. These were the four guys that he went away with. I only know the one guy. I kind of heard a spin at one point that I don't remember one of the media personalities that said this one of the people must have been so offended by this video that that's why it was released. And I tend to disagree completely. I think that this video was sent to people who were kind of like-minded, who thought it was funny. One of them sent it on to another person who probably they would have also thought it was funny. And eventually it hit somebody who went, this is absolutely disgusting. And that's kind of my take on it. So I think what you're saying is absolutely correct.
So then, who are these people that are his buddies that the family are unaware of? You know what I mean?
I think that, you know...
Because what it sounds, here's the worst case scenario of what you are saying in terms of how it might sound to an unsympathetic ear.
Yeah.
It sounds as if my brother Adam has got a very secret life. Within that secret life, he is a racist. And inside the family circles, for the first time 4 months ago with this hike that went awry, there was a glimpse of what also has now come out in the video. But for the most part, actually... we obviously didn't realize the WhatsApp groups and therefore by implication the social relations that he has that may have been networks of toxicity.
You're asking me something and I'm telling you the truth. I don't really know. I'm not friendly with his friends. That particular group, I know one person. If you want me to say my brother is a racist, he's a racist based on what he's done. I cannot deny that. A secret life. I mean, if I look at myself, and I had this conversation earlier because I was thinking, if somebody said to me, do you have black friends? Well, for myself anyway, I kind of stopped making friends in my early 20s because my friends were the ones that I made at high school, primary school, the army, and that time in my life. I don't really mix socially in a massive way with my brother or am friendly with his friends. I do know some of them. And I think the broader question is, and this is probably where it's leading to, I don't think that this is an uncommon thing in society. I don't think that this is something that doesn't exist. So, yeah, I guess.
Okay, yeah, some of the tweets coming through, lots of people feeling extremely, extremely strongly, both sympathetic about what you are saying, some people changing their mind, other people not agreeing with everything, and that's the hurly-burly of these things. Nandi says, racism is such a horrible thing, it can destroy families as well. Tina says, think this may do more harm than good. I don't believe what Nick is saying. And Adam says, Mateo must just... house the people in his WhatsApp group because clearly they betrayed the brotherhood. And someone else says, why is Nick even in this conversation? It should be his brother that should be in the hot seat. Why did you agree to come on this? Obviously, there was a lot of debate, both with yourself and also with your family members. In the end, why did you feel okay to come onto this platform?
Okay. I think that, first of all, if the whole representation of my family is this 30-second disgusting video, and that's... I also am a person, and I also have a history, and I also have a name, and I also have a family name. So do my parents. So does my brother's wife and kids. And I need to come out and put some kind of humanity to this, and I don't expect to please everybody with what I'm saying. I didn't do anything. A lot of people around me who've been affected by this didn't do anything, and quite frankly, there are only 5 people in the country with my surname. I'm going to be the equivalent of... Everywhere I go, the name Kat Savalos will ring like, and I don't want to bring other people's names into it, but a hypothetical another female racist who had a case fairly recently, and anybody says that name and you know who they are. I think it's important also that I come out and say we are actually decent people with all the complexities and difficulties of the history of this country, white privilege, colonial, or I can give the buzzwords, and I mean, but the truth is it's a complex mess, and I think the story even is a reflection of this exact mess. So,
okay.
You is CBS Makaiza on 702 and Cape Talk.
Nick Katsavelos is speaking to me, brother of Adam Katsavelos. Adam is not in the country. And Nick, obviously, is implicated in this insofar as the family itself have felt the wrath on social media, the ethical judgments made of the entire family, not just of his brother. And then obviously also there have been some consequences in terms of business. A couple of people would like to engage you, but there's a question here on Twitter, which is one I had in mind, but I didn't want to interrupt you earlier. Muahi asked the following, and I had the same in mind. So what did Nick say or do when Adam used the K word after the Drakensberg incident? Nick may not have been the recipient of the latest video, but what about 4 months ago? Can he tell us how he responded when he heard his brother use that word after his Drakensberg incident?
How did I respond? I guess I was kind of complicit in a sense. I said to him, you need to calm down. I advise that you go and get, counseling for this and, you know, kind of deal with it. He was so enraged at the point. There wasn't really much conversation happening. It was more of a monologue, you know. Kind of sent him home and just told him to stay away for a while.
Did you say to him, Adam, that's racist, dude?
You know, I mean, you see, Bess, I can't remember, and I'm gonna be very honest with you. I probably didn't. I don't actually remember the exact course of events that happened there. I probably did not say to him, "Bro, that's racist." I just said to him, "Listen, get a hold of yourself. You need to probably go and speak to somebody and see somebody and just leave for a while. You need to get away."
Mm-hmm. When someone commits an act of violence, physical violence, or language that constitutes psychological violence, right? Then there are victims. So there are different parts to this discussion. There's the family bit. There is your brother and assessing his character, his behavior, ethically and legally. But then the most important people we haven't spoken about, and we're already two-thirds into the conversation almost, and that is the victims, the people who are the object of the speech. What are your reflections on Black South Africans who are, in fact, the collective group victims whose dignity had been impaired by the now twice usage of the K word?
I'll take it to the point where I went to go face the staff. You know, I had a meeting with my staff off because we hadn't reopened the business, and we all met in a park, and the shame for me to have to, you know, I asked them, had everybody seen the video? One of the guys hadn't. I took him aside and I showed him the video. And I mean, in truth, I'm so embarrassed and I'm so, I cannot begin to, I'm not a black person. I cannot begin to imagine the pain that this has caused for people, but I could see it clearly with the people that I know and that I've worked with for years and years and years.
Can I tell you why I'm asking that in part? You know, the difficulty with interviews like this one for me as well, this is not fun. And I have my own journalistic ethics and duties and my own ethical guidelines beyond being a journalist. And one of them is that there's a certain privilege that comes even with being able to speak to a journalist. I had a very good friend of mine, I don't know if he still regards me as a friend, Zaki Ahmad here, talking about his duties in relation to equal education as a board member years ago. But the people who are often not here are the ones who are the actual or the alleged victims. Now, when it comes to the K word, it's a bit difficult because there's no individual victim, but we know that black people collectively are the victims. And they don't get centered. We get a chance to hear your voice, to look at your face, to tell your story, the humanity, the complexity. And I'm just wondering where black people have figured in the family conversations about Adam's video.
I guess you'd have to ask black people. I cannot. It's not something that I can really answer for you.
Not how black people feel. Right. What I mean is, in the conversations that you've had with mom and dad and the siblings, how much of that conversation has been about Adam as opposed to about the black people that are the ones whose dignity were impaired, if you get what I'm asking?
I get what you're asking now. And I think yesterday, myself and my wife had a quite heated argument with my parents, saying that what's happened here and the end result of this is Adam actually really, really needs to look deeply within himself. and find whatever the damage that is done is. I mean, it's undeniable. But the truth is you can't be half racist. You can have racism or prejudice within you, but you cannot be a racist. It's constantly being vigilant and understanding that you come from an unbelievable place of privilege, that you cannot understand how much damage you do to people because you're so thoughtless in terms of the whole history and yeah.
Siyanda, good morning to you. What did you want to say? Welcome to this conversation.
Thank you, Sivius. Morning, and to your listeners, and I'd like to say morning to Nick.
Good morning.
First of all, I stand with Nick. I'm a black South African, and as much as all this has happened, Adam is not a reflection of Nick, but unfortunately he represents the family. In any case, most serial killers, if I can say the least, are never known in the family. We can have dinner, we can all do things, laugh, and tomorrow you hear that so-and-so did something. The person who should be accountable now is Adam. He's not around, and I understand Nick is doing the right thing, but it doesn't make him a racist until we find something, because now we have to be factual. What has happened now has shifted things to a point where Nick and the family or business partners are affected. So the business itself, the entity, is not a racist entity, but now has become overlooked as that.
Siyanda, can I just stop you there? Hold on. Can we have a three-way conversation as South Africans here, right? So I'm going to challenge you here. I don't know whether Nick is a racist. I'm going to have to see. For me, there are two circumstances under which I judge someone as a racist. The first, if you use the word K, I don't need to know anything else about your life. And then there's the more difficult second category where most racists will fit in, not by using the word K, but the details of your everyday interactions with other people. Then I can look at a slice of your life narrative and begin to make inferences. So it's a one strike and you're a racist if you use the K word. And then if you don't use the K word, then it's a more complex character judgment. That's my general approach. But now let's bring it back to you and me and to Nick. Levels of complicity also are a matter of degree. If I say, you're so lucky, eh? There were plenty of kaffirs at Muizenberg this morning. Then obviously I'm complicit because I'm meeting the one strike and you're a racist criterion. But what about complicity in relation to being vigilant? If my brother used the K word 4 months ago, we should have done more. I am responding because I'm a human being with deep empathy to Nick, his body language, his tone, and unscripted conversation. But there's also a part of me that think, why didn't you call Adam to order 4 months ago? So I want to say the same to you, Siyanda. If you're going to have a black friend who's deeply misogynistic, I don't care if they are woke on racism. If you don't call them out on their misogyny, there is a complicity that will apply to you in virtue of your silence or your lack of challenging them. How does that feature in this conversation for all of us as South Africans?
No, that is true, Sivius, and I will give you that. It's the responsibility of the person hearing it. But I'll be honest with you, a friend of mine comes in and is like, hey, these so-called, if I can, these white people did this. The first response is not to be like, you are being racist. Sure. First response is to assess the situation, because now we're being real. I am not going to be an advocate for racism in a situation. But yes, it could have changed a lot of things, Nick. And unfortunately, maybe at that time, you didn't see it fit, or really, it wasn't about him being a racist. It was about him. Is he okay? Did you get hurt? What was the situation? But I think that should be the conversation, you see, because that when are we accountable?
I hear you.
Yes.
Hear you. And maybe here I want to put aside, because I have the freedom, my boss has given it to me, of not speaking to you as a talk show host. Okay. I want to speak to you as a fellow South African.
Okay.
I think what you should do, and I know it's a big burden, is if that Drakensberg incident had to play out again, and if it does play out again in your friendship circles or even with strangers, I think you need to call the dude out, dude. I really think you do. I think both of us have that burden. Unfortunately for you, in my opinion, you have an even higher burden as a white South African, for the simple reason that other white South Africans, your brother included, will assume a camaraderie between you on the basis of your skin color, and they will let their guard down in the way that they won't with me, which means, unfortunately for you as Nick, you're going to have many more opportunities to hear that kind of stuff.
I think I agree with you. I think also let's, to intellectualize these things over and over again and put a standard that's always the standard on every situation is not human and not realistic. I'm certainly not on my best game all the time. I'm a pretty flawed human being. I don't have all the answers all the time. Sometimes I don't want to have the confrontation either.
It's draining.
It is draining, and it's constant vigilance.
I mean draining. It's also emotionally draining.
Sorry, draining. Hmm. It's extremely draining. And, you know, you bring up the situation around my brother after the hike and what had gone on. And the only analogy that I could really use is at that point, with the kind of anger and rage that was going on, and I'm not going to say that either way I would or wouldn't have said something. You can't have a rational conversation with somebody when they're that angry, when they're that frightened, when they're that whatever is going on, emotionally charged. Hmm. So I'm not defending myself. I think I have taken, from my perspective, I've done a lot of work in my life around the race issue. I personally have looked deeply into this, and that can sound like speak on radio. That is the truth. And I'm certainly not perfect at this, and I don't claim to be. I hope going forward I can do the right thing, but I would pretty much guess that there are going to be times where I'm not going to get it right like anybody.
Sure. Yeah. Stephen, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Julius. I just wanted to comment. It's coincidental what Nick just said. I've sat in training circles with Nick, working on diversity and white privilege and so on. And it's tough, you know. Nick's done his work. I've done my work, and I said in the past tense, but it's actually in the present tense. It's all the frigging time. It's so difficult as a white South African being brought up in a certain way, in a certain culture, and wanting to change that kind of what's inside. It's just this constant being constantly aware and failing sometimes. You know, and I don't know Adam, so I can say it straight. I think Adam's a racist. I just want to commend Nick on his courageousness coming on your show. I would think that's a very scary place to be.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Stephen. Don't worry about the tears. Tears are good. Just speak from a place of honesty for me, Nick. Obviously, Stephen knows you quite well. That's why he called in to testify to some of the work you've done on yourself. Ndaba, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius. You know, last week we had a conversation with, I think it was Stephanie and Tim.
Yes, that's right.
And at the end of the conversation, I said to you, they need to help us find the white people who are willing to have these difficult conversations.
Yes.
And while I'm not going to defend Nick, and good morning to you, Nick.
Good morning.
Or his brother or his family. I don't know enough about the situation. I do appreciate the his braveness and the candor with which he's talking to us now.
Yeah.
And I'd be really interested if Nick was willing to have a conversation with him offline.
Yeah.
About this whole matter.
Yeah. I don't know what space he's in currently, but I will give him that option after the show. I'll put him together. Ndaba is one of our regulars. Solid gold. I appreciate that, Ndaba. And the timing and will be up to him. What other thoughts do you have, quickly?
Yeah, the parting shot. So I think, and I understand why Nick is reluctant to say his brother is a racist. We had a conversation not so long ago with a professor of education, and she made a point that, like, we're not supposed to say our children are smart. When they do something good, you're supposed to say you did a smart thing, not you're a smart child. And by extension, I've noticed in recent conversations I've had with women, when they say to me, oh, Ndaba, what you just did is rapey. They, it's very easy for them to say that, to say what you just did is rapey. They're not calling me a rapist, but it's a lot more palatable, and it puts me on guard to say, whoa, maybe I need to check my actions.
I agree, but let me challenge you there, right?
Yeah.
So it's double-edged. So here's the thing, and I get what Nick is saying by, and I applaud him for saying, let's not intellectualize this. I'm not intellectualizing it. Unfortunately, as black people, we experience racism so much that our ability to speak about it with incredible conceptual detail and finesse is not because we're being intellectual, it's because we know this thing at a high grade level, because we're the objects of racism. I do think there's a problem with not using identity language. I think one can be a racist, and that means you obviously do racist things. I also think it's possible to not be a racist and say things that are racist, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So when I say to another guy, when I say to a guy, don't say rapey stuff, it can also let you off the hook, but not by not asking you to examine your character. As far as I'm concerned, that video from Adam, as painful as it is for Nick and the family, it makes him a racist character, a racist person. And I don't think just because we have some humanity that we are yearning and empathy for Nick, the brother, that we must dilute what it is that we are judging Adam for. I think if someone tells a joke about Bantus, that word doesn't have the same history, then you can say that is a racist-y thing, the equivalent of rapey. But in this case, his character has to be indicted.
100% when it comes to this particular case, but I'm talking in the broader sense, that we need to start saying these things more often. So 4 months ago, he might not have been able to say, brother, I think you're racist, but he could have said, that's a racist thing.
Sure, I hear you.
I'm not saying when it comes to Adam, I think Adam has gone, you know, 0 to 100 real fast. But when we're having these conversations around the braai and the table, that we should start saying, I'm not calling you a racist right now, you haven't done enough, but what you just said is very racist.
Sure, I hear you, I hear you. Thanks, Ndaba, beautiful intervention. Let's take a break. Time flies, it's already 10 minutes before 11.
Eusebius Makhiza on your number one news and talk station.
Nick, there is an opportunity that comes with this stuff, right? We don't invite trauma into our lives, but when it does happen, you mustn't squander the opportunity. You've got children. How old are they? And what kind of conversation are you having with them about Uncle Adam?
Okay, my children are 11 and 8, boys. So when the video first hit, they could see that we were deeply disturbed, and the whole kind of household had erupted. Nozzy, who works for us, Mike, who works for us, I mean, everybody was engaging, and they said to us, what's going on? And we took the decision to sit them down and show them the video, and kids, they process differently, you know? So they looked at the video, they kind of walked off, went and played a game again. And a day later, my oldest came to me and said to me, Dad, why did Addie... He didn't actually understand what we had to explain to him. He didn't know what the word was.
Yeah.
My wife had a conversation to explain it to him. I still don't think he actually understands because he doesn't understand the context. He came up to me and he said to me, Dad, why would Addie say something about this when I've got friends? And he mentioned a few of them, Tabo, Tando, et cetera, et cetera. It's been they don't respond immediately. They kind of a day or two later will come up to you and sit down and cry and have a conversation. And it's been unbelievably traumatic for them. I don't know what else to say. And I think that they don't have kind of the skill set because they don't even have the understanding of what's really happened here.
Do you feel complicit? Or do you think that it's unfair for anyone in the public who might be so inclined to think that there is moral complicity on the part of the family?
I think that, you know, what's done is done, and I don't think that my children or my brother's children by any means deserve any retribution by this. If I was complicit in any way, well, then people can have that opinion, and if there needs to be a consequence, that may be the case. But in terms of the children and people who are indirectly related to this, business associates, staff.
Yeah.
They cannot. It's madness. It doesn't make sense.
We'll take a final call and then we'll wrap it there because the hour has just flown by.
Okay.
Bridget, good morning to you. What did you want to say?
Good morning. How are you, Xavier?
We're extremely well, Bridget.
I'm good, thank you. I just wanted to say that coming from somebody who knows both sides of the world, because I've got a mixed race family, right? My husband is Swiss. And when you do, and we've got a couple of white friends and so forth, and what he's saying is that he was surprised on 4 months ago when he had shown signs of being racist or anything like that. I honestly do not believe that because a person doesn't change overnight. It doesn't go from 0 to 100 overnight. There's always dinner. Somehow there's always those slurs. That's always takes place around the braais. I've heard it. Because they, at some point they forgot that I'm actually black. So I don't feel that what Nick is saying is the complete truth, you know, in terms of the fact that he was surprised about what's going on with his brother. I honestly, coming from a black person, I'm also, when you ask that question, actually, how do you think it affects us? Honestly, it's such a demoralizing feeling inside of us that what Adam said is actually what white people, not all of them, But most white people are thinking, and it's what they're feeling. What he said is nothing new.
Okay, let's give him a chance to respond. So Bridget's view is there must be an evolution in someone's belief system. They don't just out of the blue exhibit a particular belief, whether it be a racist or misogynistic belief, and that makes it hard for her to believe that this guy, Adam, exhibited his racism for the first time 4 months ago.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I'd given the impression that this didn't exist. When I said this, I said the video shocked the hell out of me. That is a different conversation. I'm not saying that this conversation hasn't existed. I'm not saying that behaviors haven't been shown. I openly attest to that. That's not what I've tried to portray here at all. The questions have been asked directly around the video. The video was a total shock to my system, and I'm not going to change that to make anybody happy. We live in a country where this racial tension and this racial our history is bubbling all the time, and people are making the wrong choices and dealing with things the wrong way all the time. And from my perspective, because I haven't actually been given the opportunity to give my perspective from how I kind of see it, is there is no level of honesty in conversation from my perspective. Nobody's actually approaching this thing honestly. Nobody's ever saying, yes, I am a racist. Nobody's saying, yes, I let these conversations pass when they happen around me, and they happen all the bloody time. I can't speak from the black perspective because I'm not black, so I'll speak from the white perspective. And even in that, I'm not going to get into that whole conversation, but it's a complex place, and until people start actually telling the truth, there isn't... I didn't feel like I wasn't telling the truth. The truth is, yes, I've heard racial slurs often.
We only have 1 minute left. I wanted to ask you this as my final question. I think what happens in our country is that when an incident happens like Penny Sparrow, Schadenfreude kicks in. If I'm the first one to pelt her with stones, including as a white liberal, then hopefully it means I don't have to self-examine because I'm exhibiting the fact that I'm a best white. The truth of the matter is that all of us routinely don't meet the requisite standards of moral decency in terms of speaking out on behalf of victims. Correct. What do you want to say to the country in terms of what this video involving your brother enables us to potentially do in terms of not squandering a horrible incident? A racist, horrible incident. But what are your wishes?
My wishes for this are that, once again, I'll speak from the white perspective, is that white people really, really take a good look at your privilege, take a good look at where you come from, and stop saying things like, we have policies in place now, we being discriminated against, etc., etc. I had to look very deeply into myself around this, and I have done a tremendous amount of work around this particular issue. And through this process, I've seen the threads of my prejudice still there, my complicity in not saying things. We need to take responsibility for our past, for the present. I think conversation needs to start, and it needs to be honest. I think that people need to stop defending and saying that they... labeling themselves words like I'm not a racist, I'm a liberal. Be honest with yourself and go into your own family and go into your own life, because inside all of us there's a past that we carry that we cannot hide from.
Thanks for coming into the studio. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And thank you to your wife for being the wonderful chaperone there as well. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The Midday Report.
You are having troubles in the Tshwane Metro. Solim Simanga is facing a motion of no confidence. He's in trouble. How concerned are you as the DA?
I'm concerned that political parties would make a decision to say when a mayor is acting against allegations of corruption, that political parties will say, well, we'll remove the mayor. How serious are those parties about dealing with corruption?
DA leader Musi Maimane.
The Midday Report on Cape Talk, your number one news and talk station.
Hey you, focus here for half a minute. Buy half a pair of spectacle frames from Muller's Optometrists and they'll throw in the matching half absolutely free. For nothing. Gratis. Just like that. And because Muller's don't do things in half measures, it's half off on all their spectacle frames. Buy half a pair of spectacle frames, get the other half free. It's the Muller's half off sale. Call 08000 4 2020. Mullet's Optometrists, caring for Cape Town's eyes for over a century.
There's an all-terrain 4x4 that's taking South Africa to heights of excitement. Feel the adrenaline with the all-new 7-seater Haval H9 4x4. Visit the Festival of Motoring 31 August to 2nd September, stalls 37 to 40 Kyalami, and encounter the H9 on our 4x4 track to experience the luxurious features Haval is known for. The new Haval H9 4x4. The new definition of boldness. Haval, the SUV leader.
The romantic comedy Shakespeare in Love is back by popular demand at the Fugard Theatre. Based on the Academy Award-winning film, this magical and hilarious stage production is set against a bustling background of mistaken identity, ruthless scheming, and backstage theatrics, and will thrill audiences of all ages. Join the multi-award-winning cast from the 14th of August at the Fugard Theatre for this delicious show filled with love, comedy, and a bit with a dog. Bookings directly through the Fugard Theatre box office.
In the last 24 hours, what's happened in your world?
Public Protector Busisi Mkabane says the DA's unhappiness with her appointment and the Justice Committee's displeasure with her performance are not sufficient grounds for her removal. Mkabane has responded to allegations against her in a written submission to the Parliamentary Committee. This follows DA Chief Whip John Steenhuisen's formal complaint against her, which was referred to the committee by National Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete.
24 hours a day, eyewitness news, in touch, in tune, and independent. This is Eyewitness News.
A very good morning to you. I'm Regan Thor. Former ANC parliamentarian Faki Mentor believes she was removed from her post as chairperson to Parliament's Public Enterprises Committee for opposing contentious plans to shut down SAA's India route. She's begun testifying at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry probing state capture.
I stand before you today, chairperson. Difficult as it is, in pursuant of the approach I took all my life of breaking rank and of differing when issues of principle are meddled with.
The inquiry is into its second week. Mentor is to detail how she was allegedly offered a ministerial job by the Guptas several years back. Nick Katsavelos says his family has been ripped apart since his brother's racist rant. A video emerged recently showing Adam Katsavelos using the K-word while holidaying on a Greek island. Speaking on the Eusebius McKaiser show this morning, Katsavelos says it's been a difficult time for his whole family.
My parents left to go overseas yesterday. My father and myself barely said goodbye to each other. I grew up in a family where we look after each other, and it's very difficult for me. You use the term to throw my brother under the bus. I love him. For me to unequivocally say that he's a racist, I find it very difficult to say that, although I would say, yes, there is racism within him.
Adam has been dismissed from the family business, apart from the outrage that he's been dealt with. St. George's Fine Foods has lost a lot of business amid the outrage over his comment. Plans to expand the country's nuclear capabilities are off the table at least until 2030. Releasing the long-awaited draft integrated resource plan today, Energy Minister Jeff Radebe announced that instead, renewable energy will be the key focus over the next decade. Lindsay Dentlinger has the details.
South Africa's energy demand is on the decline, currently sitting at volumes similar to 2007. Eskom's existing generation is also not at expected levels and below the assumptions of 2010 expectations. With the cost of new generation technologies having come down significantly, Minister Jeff Radebe says the key sources of energy in the coming years will be solar, wind and gas.
That when the coal installed capacity will be lower than current installed base, it will still contribute more than 65% of the energy volumes, with nuclear contributing about 4%.
The IRP will now be open to public comment for 2 months before a final version is adopted by Cabinet. Lindsay Dentlinger.